TCJ Radio International presents Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. The statistics will vary depending on the source, but if you look them up internationally, Switzerland figures very, very high in the incidence of suicide. Yet this is a country with great affluence. Some would say, probably correctly, this is the richest country in Europe. It looks like a Walt Disney picture postcard. Everything functions. Everything is wonderful. People have money, very little poverty. From the surface, from the outside, this looks like a perfect paradise. But is it really? The question begs itself. If so many people are taking their lives, not everything can be quite 100% correct and perfect here. Arthur Funkhauser, is an American-Swiss, and he studied at the renowned Massachusetts Institute of Technology, took degrees there in physics, and then later came to Switzerland, studied at the renowned, equally renowned, Swiss version of MIT, which is the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, Albert Einstein's old alma mater as well. But Art Funkhauser is not speaking to us today as a physicist. He's speaking to us today as a psychotherapist in the tradition of the great Swiss psychologist C.G. Jung. In fact, Art Funkhauser, we're sitting in his home and practice here in the city of Bern, the Swiss federal capital, studied Jungian psychology at the also internationally known C.G. Jung Institute in Zurich. And he decided later on, after all of these eminent studies he did, that psychology, Jungian psychology, and psychotherapy was his calling. Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. Let me ask you, are you personally surprised by the high ranking that Switzerland has in the international and European suicide rates?
I am not surprised because I knew that the rate is high. I didn't know how it compared to the rates of surrounding countries, but I did know that there were people here who were taking their lives, and that fairly often. So often, in fact, that they've put up nets now around the high places where people were jumping off to end their lives here in Bern.
I think it's probably correct to say that literally no Swiss or Swiss family is untouched directly or indirectly by suicide. Everybody I know somebody who killed themselves or knows a story about it. It's almost at the point of being an epidemic, it would seem. What do you see as a psychoanalyst as being the most common factors that lead people to take their own lives, which seems to me as a layman to be something which is totally against our natural instincts?
Loss of hope, loss of seeing a way forward, not knowing how to deal with the problems they face. There was a young man who set off an explosion in his apartment and destroyed a good bit of the building just yesterday or day before out of a disappointment in love. I think he was 19 years old. There's a problem here that people are isolated. Even despite Facebook, despite all the ways of talking, in this culture it's very difficult to be open with someone that you trust. And that's a problem.
Well, let's focus on German Switzerland, which is, as far as I know, the biggest problem in terms of suicide. I think of the term introversion. I've always had the impression that so many German Swiss are, for some reason, introverts. They have they're not communicators. They can't let themselves go. There's some kind of a mechanism that keeps pulling them back from being themselves, this psychological term. They have difficulty in self-realization. Why should that be?
I think, and I may be wrong, but I think it goes back to the time that this country was a very, very poor country. It was the Albania of Europe, say 200 years ago. And along came the British, And along came the Industrial Revolution.
When you say the British, excuse me, you mean mass tourism, the beginning of mass tourism.
Yes, the Brits, the people from England discovered here mountains, they discovered snow, they invented skiing, as much as I know, and hotels were built up. And Switzerland became a nation of servants, a nation of people who wanted to create an atmosphere that tourists, and especially the British, would want to come and enjoy. And these tourists should not be disturbed. So one learns to be quiet. And there's a very strong element within German-Swiss mentality. Whatever you do, do not disturb your neighbor. I think part of it is also the fact that here people tend to live in apartments and in apartment buildings. And for a long time, the insulation between these apartments was not all that wonderful. And people were scared or worried to make noise that might disturb the neighbor or that the neighbor might hear. So people here have to be quiet.
There's a strong element of self-policing in that case.
There's a very strong element of self-policing. And I can well remember when I first came here in the 70s that if you jaywalked, the nearest Swiss person would tell you, inform you that what you were doing was wrong and you should go to the corner and cross the street on the zebra stripes like when the light was green, like one should do.
Over the years, I heard cynical observations to the effect that Switzerland has so few police because every Swiss is a policeman himself.
The Swiss watch each other. They're making sure that everybody is staying...
In the box.
In the box, right. So that guests... tourists are in Switzerland referred to as guests, and the guests should not be disturbed.
What I hear you suggesting, to me anyway, is that people reach a point of just blowing up. They can't handle it anymore. The self-policing, the self-containment, this lack of self-realization, they literally explode. Some people go and pick up a military rifle and kill somebody. Somebody else just gets drunk or has a car accident, and other people just can't stand it and jump out in front of a train.
This happens far too often, and the engineers who drive the trains are specially schooled and have psychological counseling if this happens to them, and it happens far too often.
I'm sorry, it's not a scientific term. This is just plain sick.
Well, let me add another issue, and that is the issue of mobility, social mobility. This is a democracy, has been a democracy for a long, long time, but nevertheless there is a very subtle class structure here and also an economic one. It is very hard to start a business. It's very hard to get venture capital in Switzerland. So if you obey all of the rules and follow all of the steps for advancing your career...
Color within the lines.
Exactly. Then you're okay. Then you're good. But there are a lot of people who are original and creative and innovative, and Switzerland, up till recently, had very little room for people like that, people who were not going to conform to its strictures. And this, by the way, was one of the main complaints of Jung, who grew up as a pastor's son and was faced daily with this issue of conformity. And one of his big points was that we've got to become ourselves, become individuals, and come out of an adaptive conformity life and learn to be who we are, as you were saying at the beginning.
Interesting that you bring these two crucial points up. One of them being the lack of space for creative people who paint outside the lines, or think outside the box, as they say today, and the other one, C.G. Jung. I mean, it would have to be him, of all people, coming from this rather strict religious background, as I understand. And we have two poles in Switzerland. In Geneva, we had the Calvin tradition, the Calvinists, and then we had Zwingli, Ulrich Zwingli in Zurich, and he was more or less of the same ilk and persuasion. These were very strict, people would call them killjoys, who were required very, very strict adherence to a very, very strict, fine line of behavior. Do you think that over the centuries this has also perhaps played a role in cultivating this Swiss inability to let themselves go, to break out of their confinement?
There's the famous Protestant work ethic that was promulgated at the time of the Reformation by Calvin and the others, and this has held true. I think also it has also to be mentioned that Switzerland produces very fine watches because Switzerland has very few natural resources to any great amount, so they had to come up with something else that they could do. And so, and precision then became a very highly, what to say?
It's ingrained, really. It's in the self with a capital S.
Well, yes. One of the words you'll hear in any conversation here, if it goes on for any length of time, is the word genau.
Exactly, precisely.
And that's exactly what it means, yes, yeah. Genau.
And the other one I hear is schnell, fast. Everything is fast. Yes. People do everything fast, and it's attached to everything that they want to do. I'm just going to the kitchen fast. I'm going to the bathroom fast. I'm going to the store fast. It seems to be part of every sentence.
That's true, even in Bern, which is...
which is notoriously slow.
Slow, yes.
So in other words, this really takes its toll on the soul, doesn't it? It's a burden for the soul.
It does. And young people, in order to get married, the if you're going to paint inside the box, you have to have your career well on its way, and you have to have sufficient capital behind you that you can think about buying an apartment or even a house. And you can't do that here unless you're already 30-something. That's just not possible. So there's a lot of frustration among the young here.
There is one phenomenon you hear a lot about in Switzerland. In fact, it's a borrowed word from English, and they call it mobbing. What it really is in the English-speaking world is bullying. We find bullying in schools. Of course, this is not Swiss. I mean, I was bullied as a kid where I grew up. This is not a new phenomenon, but also at the place of work. This is where it's especially pronounced, and many, many people are suffering from this. What are the mechanics of this bullying or mobbing art at the place of work?
Not having been mobbed, I don't really know from personal experience, but from what I heard is if they can find some way of pushing you to the side to make room for their own careers, they'll do it.
In other words, stepping over dead bodies, as they say in German.
Yes, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there in a lot of places of work, unfortunately.
When I came here in 1970, and it wasn't the first time, but when I came here and started working, this was unheard of. You never heard of this. There was a collegiality. The pace of work was very slow. And, of course, everyone tried to do the best job they could, but we were colleagues. We were friends. We went out for a drink after work. This was so typically Swiss. And now you see less and less of that. There's more of this compartmentalized I, me, I'm number one, and I'll do anything to get there.
Well, and part of it is there's been a big effort to tighten up ship to save money where one can, and it's like the water hole is drying up, and so there's a lot of competition now for position.
The bottom line here, though, is I guess one of the classic causes of depression, stress, a lack of being able to cope, and in some desperate cases, suicide.
Right, yes. It's seen as the last out. As I said earlier, if you don't have hope anymore, then that's what's seen as the best one can do.
And this is all over the industrialized world, but certainly very obvious here these days. You see so many nervous and stressed-looking people walking around. There's another form of sort of, we could call it homegrown stress, which ironically people would consider to be typically Swiss and traditionally Swiss. This almost obsession or fixation with precision and high performance. Everyone is expected to perform at their best and all the time and to be very precise. There doesn't seem to be a lot of room for making mistakes here. And this, again, is a source of pressure on people.
Enormous pressure, yes. And it's a team atmosphere. You don't want to let the team down. You have to be at your best. And like Roger Federer, the Swiss idol, you're expected to bring home the bacon, to bring home the results.
On the other end of the scale, we're talking about the so-called achievers, you know, the people who are at the top of their fields and receive accolades and admiration and a lot of financial rewards, too, very often. But at the other end, we have the what would be called in German the so-called Versager, the losers, I guess we would say in English. Yes. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but the system has sort of left them at the side of the road. How big a problem is this lack of challenge in life, lack of opportunity, people maybe with some great ideas, but don't get a chance to articulate them and wind up terribly frustrated and stressed as a result?
That's true. There's very little wilderness left in Switzerland. There's very little room for exploring new territory. And innovation, venture capital is very hard to find. And this has a suppressing effect, repressing effect on innovation and new ideas, new companies, and new industry.
Psychologically, I've always heard that people really need a challenge from time to time.
They do, and this might explain why we have these terrible rowdies at football games before.
So-called hooligans.
Yes, yeah. The hooligans who are creating enormous destruction.
This was unheard of years ago. It was ladies and gentlemen who went to a soccer game. And now, I mean, they were just rioting in Bern, destroying things, hundreds of thousands of francs or dollars in damage. This is something that nobody could have ever foreseen even 20 years ago.
This is true. And it's not only happening here, it's happening in England as well.
There's also something which I've noticed about the school system, having put four daughters through school myself and also higher education. And that is, this school system in Switzerland seems to be conceived to produce tradesmen and business people, whereas intellectualism, academia, is very much neglected. And if you want a higher education, it may not cost a fortune here like it does in some other countries, but to get in, the barrier, the threshold is so high that hardly anybody can get in. And I can imagine that personally as a source of tremendous frustration. You have a young man, a young woman with a good brain and great potential. They could be scientists, they could be educators, writers, artists, and yet they wind up doing a menial job by comparison, simply because the system will not give them a higher education. How big a factor is this, do you think?
I have to honestly say I haven't encountered that so much, but I've been very concerned about the people who don't measure up, who aren't able to perform, who aren't able to pass the exams, and then are, as you said earlier, losers for Socket. They don't find that they now have any valid place in society. This means they're not going to have a good job. This is going to hurt their chances of finding a wife and or a husband and have a family life. And to own an own home is practically then completely out of reach. It becomes a very negative, hopeless situation for many people.
This is easily or easier to understand when we're talking about older people who maybe are career-minded, this sort of get-ahead mentality, make your success, make your fortune, and all of this. But, Art, I don't have to tell you, we're getting, in this country, we're getting 10, 11, 12-year-old children killing themselves. I mean, they're not part of this. How do you explain that?
Now they have the means. they know that they could. And the parents aren't around. They're both working. The children don't have someone that they can talk to. And there's the additional problem that you have elderly people now that, who come to a point where they're saying, I'm no longer useful. There's nothing more that I can do. And then they are depressed. They don't know why they're here. And in Switzerland, there's now organizations that you can go to and you can end your life.
The question of older people, I can't help but think of people erroneously call it science fiction. There's nothing science about it. I think two come to mind. One is Soylent Green, where basically old people are given the attractive option of ending their lives to just get them out of the way. They become a financial and social burden. And then we have another one, Fahrenheit 451, the Ray Bradbury classic, where everybody's on tranquilizers or psychotropics. No one, again, is allowed to think outside the box or to paint outside the lines. Books are banned because they're antisocial and cause people personal suffering. To me, it's a leading question, Art, but doesn't it sound to you, as it does to me, like we're dangerously close to that already, to that state of affairs? Or perhaps we've, even worse, arrived already?
I'm not sure that we've arrived, but this tendency is certainly there in certain strata of this culture, but not only this culture. I think this is a world. This is a universal problem. Psychoactive, psychotropic drugs are now over the counter, and people have access to them, whereas before they never did. And people now have the means to end their lives in ways that wasn't possible before. And people here do not die at home. They die in the facilities for the aged.
In an institution of some kind. That's the standard now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And they get depressed because they're out of their circle of friends. They're out of their the world that they knew, and they don't feel that they're good for anything anymore. And if no one comes to visit them, they lose hope.
You just used a very important word, which I wanted to bring up as well. You touched on it already, and that's this key word, depression. It seems to be endemic in this country.
And there's a lot of it in this country. I have no idea whether it's a larger percentage of the population than in other countries, but it's definitely here. And there is a social stigma of being happy here. If you're happy and joyous and dancing, especially for those over, say, 20 years of age, there must be something wrong with you in this culture. A long face is somehow the norm, and I find that difficult, I have to say. The life from a very long time ago was considered here very, very serious. It is a earnest subject.
Very earnest. I think of the line I hear constantly over the years. People say it in jest, but somehow it's coming from the unconscious. Man muss leiden. One must suffer. It seems to be part of their lives.
And man muss krampfen.
Yeah, struggle. They always struggle and suffer.
Yes. And otherwise, you won't get anywhere. That's the only way to get forward. I was told this literally by my when I was working here in the hospital,
University Hospital of Bern.
Yes, right.
Yeah. What are the telltale signs, the alarm signals, where friends and family should start to be concerned about what's going on in the minds of these concerned people?
The main one is withdrawal, when the person is no longer taking part in the family life, in social life, but is isolating themselves from friends, family, schoolmates, and so on, then that for me is an alarm bell going off. When they're closing down, shutting down, somebody needs to ask why and what's going on.
closing themselves off from the rest of the world, withdrawing into their own shell.
Getting ready to leave, yeah. You can say.
What can professionals like yourself or doctors, family doctors, do, besides just issuing them another pill? What can be done? What should be done?
Listen.
The sympathetic ear.
Yes. Listen emphatically. Listen with your feelings. Listen compassionately. Because this, the person who's at that point in his life has been through a really rocky road for whatever reasons, and they need to talk about it. They need to have somebody who understands and is not going to preach at them, lecture them, or what they could do different, but who is there with them in this, in their darkness. And only then is there a chance of ushering them out into something lighter.
As we get to the end of this, Art Funkhauser, we have painted anything but a rosy picture, but of course we are deliberately focusing on the negative, not because this country is bad or because the problems here are any worse than anywhere else, but the fact is, too many Swiss, as you say, we all agree, are taking their lives, and we're trying to get some hard talk here to find out what the possible reasons may be, to try to put our fingers on it. We're not trying to bash the Swiss here at all. But this is a reality, and it has to be studied. But finally, my question, after painting these relatively negative pictures of certain aspects of Swiss life, what about the upside, the positive side, the brighter side? How do you feel about this? Is there hope?
I believe there is. The young people today are not encapsulated in Switzerland like they were, say, 50 years ago. They're getting out. They've seen a lot. They're in touch with a lot. There's also a lot of non-Swiss who have come into Switzerland, and they are learning about them, learning about each other. And I think this is a very positive sign. I think the Internet, Facebook, the social platforms are also contributing to this. And I find there's a real possibility that things can turn around. I certainly hope so.
There's a chance this comment of mine may be misunderstood, but I've joked with many colleagues about it over the years. Sometimes you just long to get out of it. And one of the nice things about Switzerland is how quick and easy you can leave it. If I feel in an Italian mood, I jump on a train, and in an hour and a half, I'm in Domodossola on the Piazza Grande. Or if I feel French, I just go to Alsace, or go up to the French Jura, or just go to French Switzerland or Italian Switzerland for a change. You know, so this is a kind of therapy, isn't it? We can do it.
It is, or one can go up a mountain.
That is certainly true. I try to do it every day, several times with the dog, not climbing the Matterhorn, but at least going into the woods above the village. So maybe this is the trick, to find out how to deal with these frustrations and not simply moan and complain and ain't it awful, but to try to be creative with dealing and coping with these frustrations in everyday life. And that is not only a Swiss problem, this is universal.
Yes, exactly. And the Swiss have been very wise in that they've preserved their forests. You're never very far from some woods.
The Swiss love nature, and nature is a great healer, isn't it?
It is. And they love their cows.
Balm for the soul. Yeah. Art Funkhauser, a practicing Jungian psychoanalyst here in Bern, actually a very beautiful residential area at the outskirts of Bern, in the suburbs almost of Bern. Thank you very much for sharing your views, personal and professional, on what may be behind this very high incidence of suicide in Switzerland. For Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
You were just listening to Switzerland in Sound with Bob Zanotti. For more information, go to www.switzerlandinsound.com.